Chapter 54. To Camlann. 500 of the maidens behind Sulin accompanied Rand back to the royal palace, where Bale waited in the great court inside the front gates with thunderwalkers and black eyes and water seekers, and men from every other society. Their numbers filling the courtyard and crowding back into the palace through every door down to the smallest servant's way. Some watched from lower windows, waiting their turn to come out. The surrounding stone balconies were empty. In the entire courtyard, only one man waited who was not Aiel. Tyrans and Kyrianen, especially Kyrianen, stayed clear when Aiel gathered. The exception stood above Bale on the wide gray steps leading into the place. Pevin, with the crimson banner hanging limply from its staff, and no more expression surrounded by Aiel than at any other time. Avienda, behind Rand's saddle, clung tightly to him, breasts pressed against his back until the very moment he dismounted. There had been an exchange between her and some of the wise ones back at the docks that he did not think he had been supposed to hear.
"Go with the light," Amis had said, touching Avienda's face, "and guard him closely. You know how much depends on him."
"Much depends on you both,"
Bear told Avienda, almost at the same time that Malayne said irritably,
"It would be easier if you had succeeded by now."
Soralea snorted.
"Even maidens knew how to handle men in my day." "She has been more successful than you know," Amis told them.
Avienda shook her head. The Roses and Thorns ivory bracelet slid down her arm as she raised a hand to forestall the other woman, but Amis went on over her half-formed protests.
"I have waited for her to tell us, but since she will not..."
She saw him then, standing only 10 feet away, with Jodin's reins in his hand, and cut off sharply. Avienda turned to see what Amis was staring at. When her eyes found him, bright crimson suffused her face, then drained away so suddenly that even her sun-dark cheeks looked pale. The four wise ones fixed him with flat, unreadable gazes. Asmodian and Matt came up behind him, leading their horses.
"Do women learn that look in the cradle?" Matt muttered. "Do their mothers teach them? I'd say the mighty Kara Karn will get his ears singed if he stays around here much longer."
Shaking his head, Rand reached up as Avienda swung a leg over to slide down and lifted her from the dapple's back. For a moment, he held her by the waist, looking down into her clear blue-green eyes. She did not look away, and her expression never changed, but her hands tightened slowly on his forearms. What success was she supposed to have? He had thought she was sent to spy on him for the Wise Ones, but if she ever asked a question about things he held back from the Wise Ones, it was in open anger at him for keeping secrets from them. Never slyly, never trying to ferret something out. Bludgeon, maybe, but never ferret. He had considered the possibility that she was like one of Kolaver's young women, but only for the brief moment it took to think of the notion. Avienda would never let herself be used in that way. Besides, even if she had, giving him one taste of herself, then denying him so much as a kiss afterward, not to mention making him chase her halfway around the world, was no way to go about it. If she was more than casual about being naked in front of him, Aiel customs were different. If his distress at it satisfied her, likely it was because she thought it was a great joke to play on him. So what was she supposed to be successful at? Plots all around him. Was everyone scheming? He could see his face in her eyes. Who had given her that silver necklace?
"I like canoodling as much as the next man," Matt said. "But don't you think there are a few too many people watching?"
Rand released Avienda's waist and stepped back, but no more quickly than she. She bent her head, fussing with her skirt, muttering about how riding had disarrayed it, but not before he saw her cheeks redden. Well, he had not meant to embarrass her. Scowling around the courtyard, he said,
"I told you I don't know how many I can take, Bale."
With the maidens spilling back through the gates onto the ramp, there was barely room to move in the courtyard. 500 from each society meant 6,000 Aiel. The hallways inside must be packed. The towering Aiel chief shrugged. Like every other Aiel there, he had his shufa wrapped around his head, ready to veil. No crimson headband, though it seemed at least half the others wore the black and white disc on their foreheads.
Every spear that can follow you will. Will the two Aes Sedai come soon?
No. It was good that Avienda kept her promise not to let him touch her again. Lanfear had tried to kill her and Egwene because she did not know which was Avienda. How had Kadir found out to tell her? No matter. Lan was right. Women found pain, or death, when they came too close to him. They will not be coming.
There are stories of trouble by the river.
A great victory, Bale, Rand said wearily, and much honor earned.
But not by me.
Pevin came down past Bale to stand behind Rand's shoulder with the banner, his narrow, scarred face absolutely blank. Does the whole palace know about this, then? Rand asked.
I heard,
Pevin said. His jaw worked, chewing for more words. Rand had found him a replacement for his patched country coat. Good red wool, and the man had dragons embroidered on it, one climbing either side of his chest.
That you were going somewhere.
That seemed to exhaust his store. Rand nodded. Rumors grew in the palace like mushrooms in the shade. But as long as Ravin did not find out. He scanned the tile roofs and tower tops. No ravens. He had not seen a raven in some time, though he heard of other men killing them. Perhaps they avoided him now.
Stand ready.
He seized Saidine, floated in emptiness, emotionless. The gateway appeared at the foot of the steps, first a bright line that seemed to turn, opening into a square hole into blackness 4 paces wide. Not a murmur came from the Aiel. Those beyond would be able to see him as through a smoked glass, a dusky shimmering in the air, but they could as well try walking through one of the palace walls. From the side, the gateway would be invisible, except to those few close enough to see what might seem a long, fine hair drawn tight. 4 paces was as large as Rand could make it. There were limits for one man by himself, Asmodian claimed. It seemed there were always limits. The amount of Saidine you drew did not matter. The One Power had little to do with gateways, really, only the making. Beyond was something else. A dream of a dream, Asmodian called it. He stepped through onto what appeared to be a paving stone lifted from the courtyard. But here, the gray square hung in the midst of utter darkness, with a sense that in every direction there was nothing. Nothing forever. It was not like night. He could see himself and the stone perfectly, but everything else, everywhere else, was blackness. It was time to see how large he could make a platform. With the thought, more stones appeared all at once, duplicating the courtyard to an inch. He imagined it larger still. Then quickly, gray stone stretched as far as he could see. With a start, he realized that his boots were beginning to sink into the stone under his feet. It looked no different, yet it yielded slowly like mud, oozing up around his boots. Hastily, he brought everything back to a square the size of what was outside. That much stayed solid, then began increasing it by one outer row of stones at a time. It did not take long to realize he could not make the platform much larger than his first attempt. The stone still looked all right. It did not sink beneath his feet, but the second added row felt insubstantial, like a thin shell that might crack at a wrong step. Was that because this was as large as the thing could be made, or because he had not thought of it larger at first?
We all make our limits.
The thought slid up surprisingly from somewhere.
And we set them further out than we have any right.
Rand felt himself shiver. In the void, it seemed like feeling someone else shiver. It was well to be reminded that Luz Theron was still inside him. He had to be careful not to fall into a battle for self while confronting Ravin. If not for that, he might have... No. What had happened on the quay was done. He would not make a hash of it for breakfast. Reducing the platform by one outer ring of square stones, he turned. Bale was waiting out there in what seemed a huge square doorway into daylight with the steps beyond. At his side, Pevin looked no more perturbed by what he saw than the Aiel chief, which was to say, not at all. Pevin would carry that banner wherever Rand went, even the Pit of Doom, and never blink. Matt shoved back his hat to scratch his head, then jerked it low again, muttering something about dice in his head.
"Impressive," Asmodian said quietly. "Quite impressive."
"Flatter him some other time, Harper," Avienda said. She was the first to step through, watching Rand, not where she put her feet. She walked all the way to him without once so much as glancing at anything except his face. When she reached him, though, it was to swing away abruptly, settling her shawl over her elbows, and study the darkness. Sometimes women were stranger than anything else the Creator could possibly have made. Bale and Pevin came right behind her, then Asmodian, one hand clutching the strap of his harp case across his chest, the other white-knuckled on his sword hilt. And Matt, swaggering, but a trifle reluctant, and grumbling as if arguing with himself. In the old tongue. Sulin claimed the honor to be first else, but soon a wide stream followed. Not just Maidens of the Spear, but Tain Shari, True Bloods, and Far Aldazardin, Brothers of the Eagle, Red Shields and Dawn Runners, Stone Dogs and Knife Hands. Representatives of every society crowding through. As the numbers increased, Rand moved to the far side of the platform from the gateway. There was no need to see where he was going, really, but he wanted to. In truth, he could have remained at the other end or gone to one side. Direction here was mutable. Whatever way he chose to move would take him to Camelin if done properly, and to the endless black of nowhere if done wrong. Except for Bale and Sulin, and Avienda, of course, the Aiel left a little space around him and Matt, Asmodian and Pevin. "Stay away from the edge," Rand said. The Aiel nearest him moved back all of a foot. He could not see over the forest of Shufa-shrouded heads. "Is it full?" he called. The thing might hold half those who wanted to go, but not many more. "Is it full?"
"Yes,"
a woman's voice called back finally, reluctantly. He thought it sounded like Lamel. But there was still a milling in the gateway. Aiel sure there must be room for one more.
"Enough!" Rand shouted. "No more! Clear the gateway! Everyone stand well clear!"
He did not want what had happened to the Seanchan spear to happen here to living flesh. A pause, and then,
"It is clear!"
It was Lamel. He would have bet his last copper that Anila and Samara were back there somewhere, too. The gateway seemed to turn sideways, thinning until it vanished with one final flash of light.
"Blood and ashes," Matt muttered, leaning disgustedly on his spear. "This is worse than the Flaming Ways,"
which earned him a startled look from Asmodian, and a considering one from Bale. Matt did not notice. He was too busy glaring at the blackness. There was no sense of motion, no breeze to stir the banner Pevin held. They could have been standing still, but Rand knew better. He could almost feel the place they were approaching draw nearer.
"If you come out too close to him, he will sense it."
Asmodian licked his lips and avoided looking at anyone.
"At least, that is what I have heard."
"I know where I am going," Rand said. Not too close, but not too far. He remembered the spot well. No movement. Endless black and them hanging in it, motionless.
Half an hour passed, perhaps. A slight stir ran through the Aiel.
"What is it?" Rand asked.
Murmurs came across the platform.
"Someone fell,"
a bulky man near him said at last. Rand recognized him. It was Mekiar. He was Khor Darai, a night spear. He wore the red headband.
"Not one of the—"
Rand began, then caught Sulin looking at him flat-eyed. He turned to stare out into the darkness, anger a stain clinging to the emotionless void. So it was not supposed to matter more to him if one of the maidens had fallen, was it? It did. Falling forever through endless black. Would sanity crack before death came? From starvation, or thirst, or fear? In that fall, even an Aiel must eventually find fear strong enough to stop a heart. He almost hoped so. It must be more merciful than the other.
Burn me. What happened to all that hardness I was so proud of? A maiden or a stone dog, a spear is a spear.
Only thinking it could not make it so.
I will be hard.
He would let the maidens dance the spears where they wished.
He would.
And he knew he would search out the name of everyone who died, that every name would be another knife cut on his soul.
I will be hard. The light help me, I will. The light help me.
Seemingly motionless, hanging in blackness. The platform stopped. It was hard to say how he knew, when he could tell it was moving before, but he did. He channeled, and a gateway opened in the same way it had in the courtyard in Kyrian. The angle of the sun had hardly changed, but here early morning light shone on a paved street and a rising slope patched brown with drought-killed grass and wildflowers. A slope topped by a stone wall 2 spans high or more, the stones worked rough, so it seemed something natural. Above that wall he could see the golden domes of the royal palace of Andor, a few of the pale spires topped with banners rippling the white lion on a breeze. On the other side of that wall was the garden where he had first met Elaine. Blue eyes floated accusingly outside the void, the darting memory of kisses stolen in tear, the memory of a letter laying her heart and soul at his feet, of messages borne by Egwene professing love. What would she say if she ever learned about Avienda, about that night together in the snow hut? Memory of another letter, icily spurning him, a queen condemning a swineherd to outer darkness. It did not matter. Lan was right. But he wanted... what? Who? Blue eyes, and green, and dark brown. Elaine, who maybe loved him, and maybe could not make up her mind? Avienda, who taunted him with what she would not let him touch? Min, who laughed at him, thought him a wool-headed fool. All that flashed along the boundaries of the void. He tried to ignore it, to ignore anguished memories of another blue-eyed woman, lying dead in a palace corridor so long ago. He had to stand there while Aiel dashed out behind Bail, veiling themselves, spreading left and right. It was his presence that maintained the platform. It would vanish as soon as he stepped through the gateway. Avienda waited almost as calmly as Pevin, though she did occasionally put her head out to frown faintly in one direction or the other down the street. Osmodian fingered his sword and breathed too quickly. Rand wondered whether the man knew how to use the thing. Not that he would have to. Rand stared up the wall, as though at a bad remembrance. He had entered the palace this way once, too. The last veiled Aiel went by, and Rand motioned the others out, then followed. The gateway winked out of existence, leaving him in the middle of a long circle of wary maidens. Aiel were running down the curving street. It followed the line of the hill. All the streets of the inner city flowed with the land. Vanishing around winding corners as they hurried to find and secure anyone who might give alarm.
More were climbing the slope, and some had even begun to scale the wall, using tiny knobs and ridges for finger and toe holds. Suddenly, Rand stared. To his left, the street bowed downward and rounded out of sight, the decline giving a view past tile-covered towers, sparkling in the morning sun with 100 changing colors, across the tile roofs, all the way to one of the inner city's many parks, its white walks and monuments forming a lion's head when seen from this angle. To his right, the street rose a little before curving away, more towers topped by spires or domes of various shapes glittering above the rooftops. Aiel filled the street, fanning out quickly into side streets that spiraled away from the palace. Aiel, and not a soul else. The sun was high enough for people to be out and about their business, even this close to the palace. Like a nightmare, the wall above toppled outward in half a dozen places, Aiel and stones smashing down on those still climbing. Before those bouncing, sliding chunks of masonry reached the streets, Trollocs appeared in the openings, dropping the tree-thick battering rams they had used, and drawing scythe-curved swords. More, with spiked axes and barbed spears, huge man-shapes in black mail with spikes at shoulders and elbows, huge man-faces distorted by snouts and muzzles, beaks and horns and feathers, plunging down the slope with eyeless murdrol like midnight serpents in their midst. All along the street, howling Trollocs and silent murdrol poured from doorways, leaped from windows. Lightning stabbed from the cloudless sky. Rand wove fire and air to meet fire and air, a slow-spreading shield racing lightning's fall. Too slow. One bolt struck the shield directly above his head, shattering in a blinding glare, but others grounded themselves, and his hair lifted as the air itself seemed to hammer him down. Almost he lost the weave, almost the void itself. But he wove what he could not see through eyes still filled with coruscating light, spread the shield against bolts from the heavens that he could at least feel hammering at it. Hammering to reach him, but that could change. Drawing Sidene through the Angreal in his pocket, he wove the shield until he was sure it must cover half of the inner city, then tied it off. As he pushed himself to his feet, sight began to return, watery and painful at first. He had to move fast. Ravin knew he was here. He had to... Surprisingly little time had passed, seemingly. Ravin had not cared how many of his own he took. Stunned Trollocs and Murdrol on the slope were falling to spears in the hands of maidens, many of whom moved unsteadily themselves. Some maidens, those nearest Rand, were only now pulling themselves up from where they had been flung, and Pevin stood spraddle-legged, holding himself upright with the Red Banner's staff, his scarred face still blank as slate. More Trollocs boiled through the gaps in the wall above, and the din of battle filled the streets in all directions. But it might as well have been in another country so far as Rand was concerned. There had been more than one bolt in that first volley, but not all had been aimed at him. Matt's smoking boots lay a dozen paces from where Matt himself sprawled on his back. Tendrils of smoke rose from the black haft of his spear, too, from his coat, even from the silver fox head hanging out of his shirt, that had not saved him from a man's channeling. Osmodian was a twisted shape of char, recognizable only from the blackened harp case still strapped to his back. And Avienda... Unmarked, she could have laid down to rest, if she could have rested staring unblinking at the sun. Rand bent to touch her cheek, cooling already. It felt not like flesh.
Ravin!
It startled him a little, that sound coming from his throat. He seemed to be sitting somewhere deep in the back of his own head, the void around him vaster, emptier, than it had ever been before. Sidene raged through him. He did not care if it scoured him away. The taint seeped through everything, tarnished everything. He did not care. Three Trollocs broke past the maidens, great spiked axes and oddly hooked spears in hairy hands, all two human eyes fixing on him, standing there apparently unarmed. The one with a boar's tusked snout went down with Anila's spear through its spine. Eagle's beak and bear's muzzle raced on toward him, one on booted feet, the other on paws. Rand felt himself smile. Fire burst from the two trollocs, a flame at every pore, bursting through black mail. Even as their mouths opened to scream, a gateway opened right where they stood. Bloody halves of burning, cleanly sliced trollic fell, but Rand was staring through the opening. Not into blackness, but a great columned hall with lion-carved stone panels, where a large man with wings of white in his dark hair started up in surprise from a gilded throne. A dozen men, some dressed as lords, some in breastplates, turned to see what their master was looking at. Rand barely noticed them.
"Robin," he said.
Or someone did. He was not sure who. Sending fire and lightning ahead of him, he stepped through and let the gateway close behind him. He was death.
Nynaeve was having no trouble maintaining the temper that allowed her to channel a flow of spirit to the amber sleeping woman in her pouch. Even the feel of unseen eyes could not touch her through her anger this morning. Swan stood in front of her on a Salidar street in Tel Iran Riod, a street empty save for them, a few flies, and one fox that paused to look at them curiously before trotting on. "You must concentrate," Nynaeve barked. "You had more control than this the first time. Concentrate!" "I am concentrating, you fool girl!" Swan's plain blue wool dress was suddenly silk. The seven-striped stole of the Ammerlin seat hung around her neck, and a golden serpent bit its own tail on her finger. Frowning at Nynaeve, she did not seem aware of the change, though she had already worn the same 5 times today. "If there's any difficulty, it lies in that foul-tasting brew you fed me. Faugh! I can still taste it. Like flatfish gall." Stole and ring vanished. The silk dress's high neck plunged low enough to show the twisted stone ring dangling between her breasts on a fine gold chain. "If you didn't insist on me teaching you when you needed something to help you sleep, you wouldn't need it." So there had been a little sheep's tongue root and a few other things that were not really necessary in the mix. The woman deserved to have her tongue curdled. "You can hardly teach me when you're teaching Shiriam and the others." The silk paled. The neck was high again, surrounded by a white lace ruff, and a cap of pearls fitted close on Swan's hair. "Or would you rather I came after them? You claim you need some sleep undisturbed." Nynaeve quivered, fists clenched at her sides. Shiriam and the others were not the worst thing stoking her anger. She and Elaine took turns bringing them to Tel Iran Riod 2 at a time, sometimes all 6 in one night, and even if she was the teacher, they never let her forget she was accepted and they Aes Sedai. One sharp word when they made a foolish mistake. Elaine had only been sent to scrub pots once, but Nynaeve's hands were shriveled from hot soapy water. Back where her body lay sleeping they were, anyway. But they were not the worst. Nor was the fact that she barely had a moment to spare for investigating what, if anything, could be done about stilling and gentling. Loghain was more cooperative than Swan and Lyanna in any case, or at least more eager. Thank the light he understood about keeping it secret. Or thought he did. He probably believed she would heal him eventually. No, worse than that was that Faerlin had been tested and raised. Not Aes Sedai. Not without the oath rod, which was tight in the tower, but to something more than accepted. Faerlane wore any dress she chose now, and if she could not wear the shawl or choose an Aja, she had been given other authority. Nynaeve thought she had fetched more cups of water, more books, left deliberately, she was sure, more pins and ink jars and other useless things in the last 4 days than she had her entire stay in the tower. Yet even Faelaine was not the worst of all. She did not even want to remember that. Her anger could have heated a house in winter. "What's put a hook in your gills today, girl?" Swan had on a gown like those Liana wore, only more sheer than even Liana would ever wear in public, so thin it was hard to tell what color it was. Not the first time she had had that on today, either. What was perking around in the back of the woman's mind? In the world of dreams, things like these changes of clothing betrayed thoughts you might not even know you had. "You have been almost decent company until today," Swan continued irritably, then paused. "Until today, I see it now. Yesterday afternoon, Shiriam assigned Theodrin to begin helping you break down that block you've built up. Is that what has your shift in a twist? You don't like Theodrin telling you what to do? She's a wilder too, girl. If anyone can help you learn to channel without eating nettles first, she... And what has you so jittery you can't hold your dress still? Theodrin. That was what really hurt. The failure. Maybe it's something I heard last night? Theodrin was even-tempered, good-humored, patient. She said it could not be done in one session. Her own block had taken months to demolish, and she had finally realized she was channeling long before going to the tower. Still, failure hurt. And worst of all, if anyone ever discovered that she had cried like a baby in Theodrin's comforting arms when she knew she was failing. I heard you heaved Gareth Bryn's boots at his head when he told you to sit down and polish them properly. He still doesn't know Min does the polishing, does he? So he turned you upside down and... Swan's full-armed slap wrung her ears. For an instant she could only stare at the other woman, eyes going wider and wider. With a wordless shriek, she tried to punch Swan in the eye. Tried, because somehow Swan had tangled a fist in her hair. A moment later they were down in the dirt of the street, rolling about and screaming, flailing wildly. Grunting, Nynaeve thought she was getting the better of it, even if she did not know whether she was on the top or the bottom half the time. Swan was trying to yank her braid out by the roots with one hand, while the other pounded at her ribs or anything else it could find, but she had the woman the same way, and Swan's yanking and punching were definitely growing weaker, and she herself was going to pound Swan senseless in another minute, then snatch her bald. Nynaeve yelped as a toe caught her hard on the shin. The woman kicked. Nynaeve tried to knee her, but it was not easy in skirts. Kicking was not fighting fair. Suddenly, Nynaeve realized that Swan was shaking. At first, she thought the woman was crying. Then she realized it was laughter. Pushing herself up, she brushed strands of hair out of her face, her braid was all but undone, and glared down at the other woman. "What are you laughing at? Me? If you are... Not at you. At us." Still quivering with mirth, Swan shoved Nynaeve off her. Swan's hair was in wild disarray, and dust covered the plain wool dress she wore now, worn-looking and neatly darned in several places. She was barefoot, too. Two grown women, rolling around like... I haven't done that since I was 12, I think. I started thinking that all we needed would be Fat Cian snatching me up by an ear to tell me girls don't fight. I heard she once knocked down a drunken printer. I don't know why. Something very like giggles took her for a moment. Then she quieted them and stood, brushing dust from her clothes. "If we have a disagreement, we can settle it like adult women." And in a careful tone, "Still, it might be a good idea not to discuss Gareth Bryn." She gave a start as the worn dress became a gown, red with black and gold embroidery around hem and swooping neckline. Nynaeve sat there staring at her. What would she have done as wisdom if she found two women rolling around in the dirt that way? If anything, the answer kept her anger at a simmer. Swan still did not seem to realize that there was no need to brush away dust with your hands in Telairunriod. Snatching away fingers that had been repairing her braid, Nynaeve got up quickly. Before she was on her feet again, her braid hung perfect over her shoulder, and her good Two Rivers woolens might have just been laundered. "I agree," she said. She would have made any two women she caught like that sorry they had been born even before she had hauled them before the women's circle. What was she doing, lashing out with her fists like some fool man? First Sarandon. She did not want to think about that episode, but there it was. Then Latell, and now this. Was she going to get around her block by being angry all the time? Unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately, that thought did nothing for her temper. If we have disagreements, we can discuss them. Which I suppose means we'll shout at one another, Swan said dryly. Well, better that than the other. We would not have to shout if you... Drawing a deep breath, Nynaeve jerked her eyes away. This was no way to begin anew. That breath caught in her throat, and she turned her head back to Swan so quickly it seemed she had been shaking it. She hoped it did. Just for an instant there had been a face in a window across the street, and there was a flutter in her belly, a bubble of fear, a burn of anger at being afraid. "I think we should go back now," she said quietly. "Go back? You said that vile concoction would put me to sleep for a good 2 hours, and we haven't been here much more than half that." "Time works differently here." Had it been Mogadine? The face had vanished so quickly it could have been someone dreaming herself here for an instant. If it was Mogadine, they must not on any account let her know she had been seen. They had to get away. Bubble of fear, burn of anger. "I told you. A day in Telairun Riod can be an hour in the waking world or the other way round. I've dipped better out of the bilge in a bucket, girl. You needn't think you can get away with shortchanging me. You'll teach me everything you teach the others as agreed. We can go when I wake up." There was no time, if it had been Mogadine. Swan's dress was green silk now, and the Ammerlin stole and her great serpent ring were back, but for a wonder the neckline was almost as low as anything she had worn before. The ring Tarangrial hung above her breasts, somehow part of a necklace of square emeralds. Nynaeve moved without thinking, her hand lashed out, snatching the necklace so hard it tore free from Swan's neck. Swan's eyes widened, but as soon as the clasp broke, she vanished, and necklace and ring melted from Nynaeve's hand. For an instant she stared at her empty fingers. What happened to someone sent out of Telairun Riod like that? Had she sent Swan back to her sleeping body? Or to somewhere else? To nowhere? Panic seized her. She was just standing there. Quick as thought, she fled, the world of dreams seeming to change around her. She stood on a dirt street in a small village of wooden houses, none more than a single story. The White Lion of Andor waved from a tall staff, and a single stone dock stuck out into a broad river where a flock of long-billed birds flapped south low over the water. It all looked vaguely familiar, but it took her a moment to know where she was. Jureen, in Kyrian, and that river was the Arinen. It had been here that she and Egwene and Elaine had boarded the Darter, as badly misnamed as the River Serpent, to continue their journey to Tyr. That time seemed like something read in a book long ago. Why had she jumped to Jureen? That was simple, and answered as soon as she thought of it. Jureen was the one place she knew well enough to leap to in Telairun Riod that she could be sure Mogadine did not know. They had been there for an hour before Mogadine knew she existed, and she was sure neither she nor Elaine had ever mentioned it again, in Telairun Riod or awake. But that left another question, the same one in a way. Why Jureen? Why not step out of the dream, wake up in her own bed, such as it was, if washing dishes and scrubbing floors on top of everything had not left her so weary she slept right on? "I can still step out." Mogadine had seen her in Salidar, if that had been Mogadine. Mogadine knew Salidar now. "I can tell Shiriam." How? Admit she was teaching Swan? She was not supposed to have her hands on those Tarangrial except with Shiriam and the other Aes Sedai. How Swan got hold of them when she wanted, Nynaeve did not know. No, she was not afraid of more hours up to her elbows in hot water. She was afraid of Mokadeen. Anger burned in her belly fiercely. She wished she had some goose mint out of her scrip of herbs. I am so, so bloody tired of being afraid. There was a bench in front of one of the houses overlooking dock and river. She sat down and considered her situation from every angle. It was ridiculous. The true source was a pale thing. She channeled a flame dancing in air above her head. She might look solid, to herself anyway, but she could see the river through that scrap of fire. She tied it off and it faded away like mist as soon as the knot was done. How could she face Mokadeen when the weakest novice in Salidar could match or better her strength? That was why she had fled here instead of leaving Telaran Riod. Afraid and angry at being afraid, too angry to think straight, to consider her own weakness. She would step out of the dream. Whatever Swan's scheme had been, it was done. She would have to take her chances right along with Nynaeve. The thought of more hours scrubbing floors tightened her hand on her braid. Days, more likely, and maybe Shiriam's switch besides. They might never let her near one of the dream Tarangreal again, or any Tarangreal. They would set Faerlane over her instead of Theodrin, a Finnish to studying Swan and Lyanna, much less Loghain. Maybe a Finnish to studying healing. In a fury, she channeled another flame. If it was a whit stronger, she could not see it. So much for trying to crank her anger in hope it would help. There's nothing for it but to just tell them I saw Mokadeen, she muttered, yanking her braid hard enough to hurt. Light. They will give me to Faerlane. I'd almost rather die. But you seem to enjoy running little errands for her. That mocking voice pulled Nynaeve up off the bench like hands on her shoulders. Mokadeen stood in the street all in black, shaking her head at what she saw. With all her strength, Nynaeve wove a shield of spirit and hurled it between the other woman and Saidar. Tried to hurl it between. It was like chopping at a tree with a paper hatchet. Mokadeen actually smiled before she bothered to slice Nynaeve's weave, and that as casually as brushing a bite-me away from her face. Nynaeve stared at her as though pole-axed. After everything, it came down to this. The one power, useless. All the anger bubbling inside her, useless. All her plans, her hopes, useless. Mokadeen did not bother to strike back. She did not even bother to channel a shield of her own. That was how much contempt she had. I was afraid you had seen me. I grew careless when you and Swan started trying to kill each other. With your hands. Mokadeen gave a belittling laugh. She was weaving something, lazily, because there was no reason to hurry. Nynaeve did not know what it was, yet she wanted to scream. Fury seethed inside her, but fear dulled her wits, rooted her feet to the ground. Sometimes I think you are all too ignorant even to train, you and the former Ammerlin's seat and all the rest. But I cannot allow you to betray me. That weave was reaching out for her. It is time to collect you at last, it seems. Hold, Mokadeen! Birgitta shouted. Nynaeve's mouth dropped open. It was Birgitta, as she had been, in her short white coat and wide yellow trousers, intricate golden braid pulled over her shoulder, silver arrow drawn on silver bow. It was impossible. Birgitta was no longer part of Telairun Riod. She was back in Salidar, making sure no one discovered Nynaeve and Swan asleep with the sun up and began asking questions. Mokadeen was so shocked, the flows she had woven vanished. Shock lasted less than a moment, though. The gleaming arrow flew from Birgitta's bow and evaporated. The bow evaporated. Something seemed to seize the archer, jerking her arms straight up, pulling her clear of the ground. Almost immediately she was snubbed short, pulled tight between wrists and ankles a foot above the ground. I should have considered the possibility of you. Mokadeen turned her back on Nynaeve to move closer to Birgitta. Do you enjoy your flesh? without Gadol Kane? Nynaeve thought of channeling, but what? A dagger that might not even penetrate the woman's skin? Fire that would not singe her skirts? Mokadine knew how useless she was. She was not even looking at her. If she stopped the flow of spirit to the sleeping woman in amber, she would wake in Salidar. She could give warning. Her face twisted near to tears as she looked at Birgitta. The golden-haired woman hung there, staring defiantly at Mokadine. Mokadine contemplated her in return as a woodcarver would a block of wood. "There's only me," Nynaeve thought. "I might as well not be able to channel at all. There's only me." Lifting that first foot was like pulling it out of knee-deep mud, the second staggering step no easier, toward Mokadine. "Don't hurt me," Nynaeve cried. "Please, don't hurt me." A chill ran through her. Birgitta was gone. A child of perhaps 3 or 4, in short white coat and wide yellow trousers, stood there playing with a toy-sized silver bow. Flipping her golden braid back, the child aimed the bow at Nynaeve and giggled, then stuck a finger in her mouth, as though unsure whether she had done something wrong. Nynaeve sagged to her knees. It was hard work crawling in skirts, but she did not think she could have remained standing. Somehow she managed, reaching out a pleading hand and whimpering, "Please, don't hurt me. Please, don't hurt me," over and over as she dragged toward the Forsaken, a broken beetle scrabbling in the dirt. Mokadine watched silently until at last she said, "Once I thought you were stronger than this. Now I find I truly like the sight of you on your knees. That is close enough, girl. Not that I think you have courage enough to try tearing my hair out." She seemed amused by the notion. Nynaeve's hand wavered a span from Mokadine. It had to be close enough. There was only her and Telairan Riod. The image formed in her head, and there it was, silver bracelet on her outstretched wrist, silver leash linking it to the silver collar around Mogadine's neck. It was not just the eye-dom she fixed in her head, but Mokadine wearing it, Mokadine and the eye-dom, a part of Telairan Riod that she held in the form she wanted. She knew something of what to expect. She had worn an eye-dom's bracelet briefly once, in Falma. In a strange way, she was aware of Mokadine in the same way she was aware of her own body, her own emotions, two sets, each distinct, but each in her own head. One thing she had only hoped, because Elaine insisted it was so. The thing was indeed a link. She could feel the source through the other woman. Mokadine's hand leaped to the collar, shock rounding her eyes. Rage and horror. Rage more than horror at first. Nynaeve felt them almost as if they were her own. Mokadine had to know what the leash and collar was, yet she tried to channel anyway. At the same time, Nynaeve felt a slight shifting in herself, in the eye-dom, as the other woman tried to bend Telairan Riod to herself. Suppressing Mokadine's attempt was simple. The eye-dom was a link, with her in control. Knowing that made it easy. Nynaeve did not want to channel those flows, so they were not channeled. Mokadine might as well have tried to pick up a mountain with her bare hands. Horror overwhelmed rage. Getting to her feet, Nynaeve fastened the proper image in her mind. She did not just imagine Mokadine leashed in the eye-dom. She knew Mokadine was leashed, as firmly as she knew her own name. The sense of shifting, of her skin trying to crawl, did not go away, though. "Stop that," she said sharply. The eye-dom did not move, but it seemed to tremble unseen. She thought of black wasp nettles lightly brushing the other woman from shoulders to knees. Mokadine shuddered, exhaled convulsively. "Stop it," I said, "or I'll do worse." The shifting ceased. Mokadine watched her warily, still clutching the silver collar around her neck, and with an air of being poised on her toes for flight. Birgitta, the child who was, or had been Birgitta, stood eyeing them curiously. Nynaeve formed the image of her as a grown woman, concentrated. The little girl put her finger back in her mouth and began studying the toy bow. Nynaeve breathed angrily. It was hard changing what someone else was already maintaining. And on top of that, Mogadin had claimed she could make changes permanent, but what she could do, she could undo. Restore her. If you release me, I... Nynaeve thought of nettles again, and not a light brush this time. Mogadin sucked air through clenched teeth, shook like a bedsheet in a high wind. That, Birgitta said, was the most frightening thing that has ever happened to me. Herself once more, she wore the short coat and wide trousers, but she had no bow or quiver. I was a child, but at the same time, what was me, really me, was just some fancy floating in the back of that child's mind, and I knew it. I knew I was just going to watch what happened and play. Flipping her golden braid back over her shoulder, she gave Mogadin a hard look. How did you get here? Nynaeve asked. I am grateful, you understand, but how? Birgitta gave Mogadin a final stony stare, then opened her coat to fish in the neck of her blouse, pulling up the twisted stone ring on a leather thong. Swan woke up, just for a moment and not all the way, long enough to grumble about you snatching this from her. When you didn't wake right behind her, I knew something must be wrong, so I took the ring and the last of what you mixed for Swan. There was hardly any left, only the dregs. Enough to put me to sleep. It tastes horrible, by the way. After that, it was as easy as finding feather dancers in Shiota. In some ways, this is almost as if I were still... Birgitta cut off with another glare for Mogadin. The silver bow reappeared in her hand, and a quiver of silver arrows at her hip, yet after one moment they vanished again. Past is past, and the future is ahead, she said firmly. I was not truly surprised to realize there were two of you who knew they were in Telairanriod. I knew the other must be her, and when I arrived and saw the pair of you... It seemed as if she had already captured you, but I hoped that if I distracted her, you might come up with something. Nynaeve felt a stab of shame. She had considered abandoning Birgitta. That was what she had almost come up with. The thought had only been there for a moment, rejected as soon as it came, but it had come. What a coward she was. Surely Birgitta never had even moments when fear almost took control of her. A faint taste of boiled cat fern and powdered maven's leaf. I almost ran away, she said faintly. I was so frightened my tongue stuck to the roof of my mouth. I almost ran away and left you. Oh? Nynaeve writhed inside, as Birgitta considered her. But you did not, did you? I should have loosed before I called out, but I've never felt comfortable shooting anyone from behind, even her. Still, it all worked out. But what do we do with her now? Mogadin certainly seemed to have overcome her fear. Ignoring the silver collar around her throat, she watched Nynaeve and Birgitta as though they were the prisoners, not she, and she was deliberating what to do with them. Except for an occasional twitch of her hands, as if she wanted to scratch where her skin held the memory of nettles, she appeared black-clad serenity. Only the Eidam let Nynaeve know there was fear in the woman, almost a gibbering, but pushed down to a muted buzz. She wished the thing let her know what Mogadin was thinking as well as feeling. Then again, she was just as glad not to be inside the mind behind those cold, dark eyes. "Before you consider anything drastic," Mogadin said, "remember that I know much that would be useful to you. I have observed the other chosen, peeked into their schemes. Is that not worth something? Tell me, and I will consider whether it's worth anything," Nynaeve said. What could she do with the woman? Lanfear, Grendal, Ravine, and Samael are plotting together. Nynaeve gave the leash a short tug, staggering her. I know that. Tell me something new. The woman was captive here, but the Eidam only existed so long as they were in Telairanriod. Do you know they are drawing Randall Thor to attack Samael? But when he does, he will find the others as well, waiting to trap him between them. At least he will find Grendel and Ravine. I think Lanfear plays another game, one the others know nothing about. Nynaeve exchanged worried glances with Birgitta. Rand must learn of this. He would, as soon as she and Elaine could speak to Egwene tonight, if they could manage to put their hands on the Turangreal long enough. That is, Mogadine murmured, if he lives long enough to find them. Nynaeve took hold of the silvery leash where it joined the collar and pulled the Forsaken's face close to hers. Dark eyes met her gaze flatly, but she could feel anger through the eidam and fear wriggling up and being stamped down. You listen to me. Do you think I don't know why you are pretending to be so cooperative? You think if you keep talking long enough, I will make some slip and you can escape. You think the longer we talk, the harder I'll find it to kill you. That much was true enough. To kill somebody in cold blood, even one of the Forsaken, would be hard. Maybe harder than she could manage. What was she going to do with the woman? But you understand this. I won't allow hinting at things. If you try keeping anything back from me, I will do to you everything you ever thought of doing to me. Dread, creeping through the leash, like bone-chilling shrieks deep in Mogadine's mind. Maybe she did not know as much about Eidam as Nynaeve thought. Maybe she believed Nynaeve could read her thoughts if she tried. Now, if you know of some threat to Rand, something ahead of Samael and the others, you tell me. Now! Words spilled from Mogadine's mouth, and her tongue flickered out to wet her lips continually. Althor means to go after Ravine, today, this morning, because he thinks Ravine killed Morghese. I don't know whether he did or not, but Althor believes it. But Ravine never trusted Lanfear. He never trusted any of them. Why should he? He thought it all might be some trap set for him, so he has laid a trap of his own. He has set wards through Camelin, so if a man channels a spark, he will know. Althor will walk right into it. He almost certainly already has. I think he meant to leave Cairhien right after sunrise. I had no part of it. It was none of my doing. Nynaeve wanted to shut her up. The fear sweat glistening on the woman's face made her sick, but if she had to listen to that pleading voice, too. She started to channel, wondering whether she would be strong enough to hold Mogadine's tongue, then smiled. She was linked to Mogadine and in control. Mogadine's eyes bulged as she wove flows to stop her own mouth and tied them. Nynaeve added plugs for her ears, too, before turning to Birgitta. What do you think? Elaine's heart will break. She loves her mother. I know that. Nynaeve took a breath. I will cry with her and mean every tear, but right now I must worry about Rand. I think she was telling the truth. I could almost feel it. She caught the silver leash just below her bracelet and shook it. Maybe it's this, and maybe it was imagination. What do you believe? That it's the truth. She was never very brave unless she clearly had the upper hand, or thought she could get it. And you certainly put the fear of the light into her. Nynaeve grimaced. Birgitta's every word put another bubble of anger in her belly. She was never very brave except when she clearly had the upper hand. That could describe herself. She had put the fear of the light into Mogadine. She had, and she had meant every word when she said it. Boxing somebody's ears when they needed it was one thing. Threatening torture, wanting to torture, even Mogadine, was something else again. And here she was trying to avoid what she knew she had to do. Never very brave. Except when she clearly had the upper hand. This time the bubble of anger was seeded by herself. We have to go to Camelin. I do, at least. With her. I may not be able to channel strongly enough to tear paper as I am, but with the Eidam I can use her strength. You won't be able to affect anything in the waking world from Telaranriod, Birgitta said quietly. I know. But I have to do something. Brigitta threw back her head and laughed. Oh, Nynaeve, it is such an embarrassment being associated with such a coward as you. Abruptly her eyes widened in surprise. There wasn't much of your potion left. I think I am wake. In mid-word, she was simply no longer there. Taking a deep breath, Nynaeve untied the flows around Mogadine, or made her do it. With the Eidam, it was hard to tell which, really. She wished Brigitta was still there, another pair of eyes. Someone who probably knew Telairan Riod better than she ever could. Someone who was brave. We are taking a trip, Mogadine, and you are going to help me with every last scrap of you. If anything takes me by surprise, suffice it to say, anything that happens to the one wearing this bracelet happens to the one wearing the collar, only about tenfold. The sickly look on Mogadine's face said she believed, which was just as well, since it was true. Another deep breath and Nynaeve began forming the image of the one place in Camelon she knew well enough to remember, the royal palace where Elaine had taken her. Ravine must be there, but in the waking world, not the world of dreams. Still, she had to do something. Telairan Riod changed around her.